When I asked her for a name, I said, swallowing hard, I didn't think it would be her mother's. We are all prepared to face the consequences of our actions, Zosita said. I will take full responsibility for the attack, and it will be believable, since I am a Xotet exile. I used to teach Xotet children how to speak Otherian. Some of the older Xotet still knew other languages, from before it was illegal to speak them. There was nothing my father or Rizek could do about that. You couldn't force a person to unlearn something. I knew some of them taught classes, and that doing so could earn a person exile, but I had never thought I would meet one. She tilted her head, to the other side this time. It was, of course, my voice that spoke over the intercom, Zosita added. I cleared my throat. You know Rizek's going to execute you, publicly. I am aware of that, Miss Novak. Okay. I winced as the current shadows spread. Are you prepared to endure an interrogation? I assumed he wouldn't need to interrogate me if I came of my own accord. She raised her eyebrows. He's concerned about the exile colony. He'll want to get whatever information he can out of you before he... The word execute stuck in my throat. Kills me, Zosita said. My, my, Miss Novak. You can't even say the words? Are you so soft? Her eyes shifted to the armor that covered my marked arm. No, I snapped. It's not an insult, Zosita said, a little more gently. Soft hearts make the universe worth living in. Unexpectedly, I thought of Akos, whispering an apology in Thuvazit, instinctively, when he brushed past me in the kitchen. I had played his gentle words over and over in my mind that night, like it was music I couldn't get out of my head. It came to me just as easily now. I know what it's like to lose a mother, I said. I don't wish it on anyone. Even renegades I hardly know. Zosita let out a little laugh, shaking her head. What? I said, defensive. I celebrated your mother's passing, she said. I went cold. As I celebrated your father's, and would have celebrated your brother's, even yours, perhaps. She ran her fingers over the metal railing beside her. I imagined her daughter's fingerprints, pressed there earlier minutes ago, now wiped clean by her touch. It is a strange thing to realize that your worst enemies can be loved by their families. You didn't know my mother, I wanted to snarl, as if it mattered, now or ever, what this woman thought of Ilira Noavec. But Zosita was already half-faded in my mind, like her own shadow, marching in this moment toward her own doom. And for what? For a well-aimed blow against my brother? Two renegades had fallen to Voss in that attack. Had it been worth their lives? Is it really worth it? I said, frowning. Losing your life for this? She was still smiling that strange smile. After I fled Xotet, your brother summoned what remained of my family to his home, she said. I had meant to send for my children when I reached a safe place, but he got to them first. He killed my eldest son, and he took my daughter's eye, for crimes they had no part in. She laughed again. And you see, you aren't even shocked. You have seen him do worse, no doubt, and his father before him. Yes, it is worth it. And it was worth it to the two who died trying to take down your brother's steward. I don't imagine you can understand. For a long time we stood, with just the hum of the pipes and distant footsteps to break the silence. I was too confused, too tired, to hide the wincing and flinching as my current gift did its work. To answer your question, yes, I can endure an interrogation, Zosita said. Can you tell lies? She smirked again. I suppose that's a silly question. Will you tell lies? I hesitated. When had I become the sort of person who helped renegades? She had just told me that she would have celebrated my death. At least Rizek wanted to keep me alive. What would the renegades do to me if they managed to overthrow my brother? Somehow, I didn't care. I tell lies better than I tell truths, I said. It was a quote from some poetry I had read on the side of a building with Otega on one of our excursions. I am a Chotette. I am sharp as broken glass and just as fragile. I tell lies better than I tell truths. I see all of the galaxy and never catch a glimpse of it. Let us go tell some, then, Zosita said.
Chapter 19. Akos. Akos bent over the pot, resting on a burner in his little room on the Sojourn ship, and breathed in some of the yellow fumes. Everything in front of him blurred, and his head dropped, heavy, toward the countertop, just for a tick before he caught himself. Strong enough, then, he thought. Good. He'd had to ask Syra to get him some Sendus leaf to strengthen the drug, so it would work faster, and it had worked. He had tested it the night before, dropping asleep so soon after swallowing it that the book he was reading slid right out of his hands. He turned off the flames to let the elixir cool, then jerked to attention at the sound of a knock. He checked the clock. In Thuva, he'd been more aware of the world's rhythms, dark in the deadening time and bright in the awakening. The way the day closed like a shutting eye. Here, without the sunset and sunrise to guide him, he was always checking. It was the 17th hour. Time for Jorik. The corridor guard was there when he opened the door, looking critical. Jorik was behind him. Kariseth, the guard said. This one says he's here to see you. Yes, Akos said. Didn't think you could receive visitors, the guard said with a sneer. Not your quarters, are they? My name is Jorik Kuzar, Jorik said, leaning hard into his surname. So, get out of his face. The guard looked over Jorik's mechanic uniform, eyebrows raised. Go easy on him, Kuzar, Akos said. He's got the world's most boring job, protecting Syra Novak. Akos went back to his narrow room, which was giving off a leafy, malty smell. Medicinal. Akos dipped a finger in the mixture to test its heat. Still warm, but now cool enough to put in a vial. He wiped the potion off on his pants, not wanting it to absorb through his skin. He searched the drawers for a clean vessel. Jorik was standing just inside the doorway, staring, his hand hanging off the back of his neck like always. What? Akos said. He got out a dropper and touched it to the potion. Nothing, it's just... This isn't what I expected Syra Novak's room to look like, Jorik said. Akos grunted a little. It wasn't what he'd expected either, as he squeezed the yellow elixir from the dropper into the vial. You really don't sleep in the same bed, Jorik said. Cheeks hot, Akos scowled at him. No. Why? Rumors, Jorik shrugged. I mean, you do live together. Touch each other. I help her with her pain, Akos said. And you're fated to die for the Novix. Thanks for the reminder. I'd almost forgotten, Akos snapped. Did you want my help or not? Yeah, sorry, Jorik cleared his throat. So, same plan for this one? They had already done this once. Jorik had dosed Suzao with a sleeping potion so he would collapse in the middle of breakfast. Now Suzao was on edge, and searching for whoever had drugged him and embarrassed him in front of everybody. Akos figured it wouldn't take much to make Suzao angry enough to challenge him to fight to the death. Suzao wasn't exactly a reasonable man. But he didn't want to take chances, so he was having Jorik drug his dad again, just to be sure. Hopefully this would send Suzao on a rampage, and after the scavenge, Akos could confess to being behind all the drugging and fight him in the arena. 2 days before the scavenge, slip it into his medicine, Akos said. Leave the door to his quarters cracked so it looks like someone came in from outside, or else he might suspect you. Right. Jorik took the vial from Akos, testing the cork with his thumb. And after that? It's under control, Akos said. After the scavenge, I'll tell him I'm the one who's been drugging him. He'll challenge me. I'll... end it. The first day arena challenges are legal again. Okay? Okay. Jorik bit down hard on his lip. Good. Your mom okay? Jorik looked away at Syra's rumpled sheets and the burnstone lanterns strung together over the bed. She'll make it. Yeah. Good, Akos said. You better go. Jorik put the vial in his pocket. It seemed to Akos like he didn't really want to go. He dawdled by the end of the counter, skimming it with a fingertip that likely came away sticky. Neither Akos nor Syra cared all that much for scrubbing. When Jorik finally opened the door, Aija and Voss were in the hallway, about to come in. Aija's hair was long enough now to be tied back, and his face was bony and old, like he was 10 seasons Akos' senior instead of 2. At the sight of him, Akos felt a powerful urge to grab him and run. No plan for what he might do after that, of course, because they were on a city-sized spaceship on the galaxy's edge, but he wanted to anyway. Wanted a lot of things he would never get these days.
Jorik, Voss said. How interesting running into you here. What's your business?
Akos and I have been sparring together, Jocko said without hesitating. He was a good liar. Akos figured he had to be growing up in his family, with all these people around. Just checking if he would go for another round.
Sparring, Voss laughed a little. With Karaseth? Really? Everyone needs hobbies, Akos said like it didn't matter. Maybe tomorrow, Jorik, brewing something.
Jorik waved and walked away. Fast. Akos waited until he turned the corner before turning back to Aija and Voss.
Did Mother teach you to do that?
Aija said, nodding to the yellow fumes still wafting from the burner.
Yes.
Akos was already flushed and shaking, though he had no reason to be scared of his own brother. Mom taught me. Aija had never called her mother in his life. That was a word for snotty Shissa kids, or for the Shotet, not for children of Hesse.
So kind of her to prepare you for what awaited you. It's a shame she didn't feel the need to do that with me.
I just stepped into Akos's room, running his fingers over the taut sheets. The even stack of books, marking them in a way that wouldn't erase. He drew the knife at his side and spun it on his palm, catching it with his thumb. It would have struck Akos as menacing if he hadn't seen Rizek do it so many times. Maybe she didn't think this future would come to be. He didn't believe it. But he didn't know what else to say.
She did.
I know she did. I saw her speak of it in a vision. Aija had never talked about his visions with Akos. Had never gotten a chance. Akos couldn't imagine it. The future intruding on his present,
so many possibilities it was dizzying. Seeing his family but not knowing if the images would come to be. Not being able to speak to them. Not that it seemed to matter to Aija anymore.
Well, he said, we should go home and ask her about it.
I'm doing just fine here, Aija said.
I suspect you are too, judging by these accommodations.
You talk like him now, Akko said.
You realize that, right?
You talk like Rizek Novavec, the man who killed Dad.
Hate Mom if you want, but you can't possibly hate Dad.
Aija's eyes went hazy, not quite blank, but far, far away instead.
I don't...
He was always at work, never at home.
He was home all the time!
Akko spat out the words like they had rotted.
He made dinner. He checked our homework. He told stories.
You don't remember.
But he knew the answer to his own question. It was in Aija's blank eyes.
Of course Rizek had taken Aija's memories of their dad. He had to have been so horrified by his own father that he'd stolen theirs instead.
Suddenly Akos's hands were in fists in Aija's shirt, and he was shoving his brother against the wall, knocking over a row of vials. He looked so small between Akos's hands. He was so light it was easy to lift him. It was that, more than his slack surprise, that made Akos let go as quickly as he'd grabbed him.
When did I get so big? He thought, staring at his thick knuckles.
Long fingers like his dad's, but thicker. Good for hurting people.
She's taught you her brutality.
Aija straightened his shirt.
If I don't remember something, do you think you can shake it out of me?
If I could, I'd have tried it already. Akko stepped back.
I would do anything to make you remember him.
He turned away, running his hand over the back of his neck like Jorik always did. He couldn't look at Aija anymore. Couldn't look at either of the men standing in his quarters.
Why did you come here?
Did you want something?
We came here with two purposes, Aija said.
First, there is an ice flower blend that promotes clear thinking. I need it to crystallize some of my visions. I thought you might know how to make it.
So Rizek doesn't have your current gift yet?
I think he's satisfied with my work thus far.
You're kidding yourself if you think he'll settle for trusting you over just taking your power for himself, Akko said, quiet, bracing himself against the counter because his legs felt so weak.
If it even works that way.
And as for your ice flower blend,
well, I'll never give you something that will make Rizek Novavec wage war against Thuva. I would sooner die.
Such venom, Vas said.
When Akos looked at him, Vas was tapping his fingertip against the point of a knife.
He'd almost forgotten Vas was there, listening. Akos's heart hacked like a scythe in his chest at the sound of his voice. All he could see when he blinked was Vas wiping his dad's blood off on his pants on the way out of their house in Thuva.
Vas moved closer to the burner to breathe in the now fading yellow fumes. He stayed bent for a tick, then whipped around with his knife drawn and pressed the point to Akos's throat. Akos forced himself to stay still, heart still scythe-like. The point of the blade was cold.
My cousin was drugged recently, Vas said.
I don't keep track of your cousins, Akos replied.
I bet you keep track of this one, Vas said. Suzao Kuzar. He was there when your father breathed his last.
Akos glanced at Aija, hoping.
For what?
For his brother to defend him? For a reaction to Vas talking about their dad's death like it was nothing?
Cyrus and Insomniac,
Akko said, hands fidgeting at his sides. It takes a strong potion to make her sleep. That's what I'm making it for. The knife point dug into Akos's skin, right over the scar Rizek had given him. Vas, Ija said, and he sounded a little terse. Nervous, Akos thought. But it was a foolish hope. You can't kill him. Rizek won't allow it, so stop playing at it. Vas grunted and took the knife away. Akos's body ached as it relaxed. Is there some kind of Shotet holiday today where you visit the people you hate to make them miserable? He wiped at the cold sweat on the back of his neck. Well, I'm not celebrating. Leave me alone. No. But your presence has been requested to witness the interrogation of a confessed renegade, Vas said, along with Cyrus. What use would I be at an interrogation? Akko said. Vas tilted his head, a smile creeping across his face. You were initially brought here to bring relief to Syra on a regular basis. I assume that is the use you will be put to. Right, Akko said. I'm sure that's the reason. Vas sheathed his knife. He probably knew as well as Akos did that he wouldn't need it to get Akos to do what he said. After all, they were on a ship. In space. Akos stuffed his feet into his boots and followed Vas out, Ija falling into step behind him. The potion he had made would keep until he got back, stable now that it was cooling. Ornery while heating, though, his mom had liked to say. People gave Vas a wide berth in the more crowded hallways, not even daring to look his way. They looked at Akos, though. It was almost like being Thuvazit marked him. It was in his casual chewing of hushflower petals, stowed in his pockets, his careful heel-toe gait used to slipping on ice, the way he wore his shirts buttoned up to his throat instead of open across his collarbone. Ija's gait was now as heavy as any Shotet's, his shirt unbuttoned under his Adam's apple. Akos hadn't been to this part of the ship before. The floors turned from hard metal grates to polished wood. He felt like he was back in Noavek Manor, swallowed up by dark paneling and shifty Fenzu light. Footsteps echoing down the corridor, Vas led them to a tall door, and soldiers parted to let them by. The room beyond was as dim as the weapons hall where he had lost Ija to Rizek's gift. The floor shone, and the far wall was all windows, showing a faint curl of the current stream as the ship turned away from it. Rizek stood looking out at it, his hands clasped behind his back. Behind him was a woman bound to a chair. Syra was nearby, too, and she didn't look at Akos when he went in, which was itself a warning. The door slammed behind him, and he stayed right next to it. Clarify for me, Syra, how it is that you came across this traitor, Rizek was saying to Syra. When the attack occurred, I recognized the voice that came on over the intercom. I still don't know from where, Syra said, arms crossed. Maybe the loading bay. But I knew I could find her by her voice. So I listened, and I found her. And you said nothing about this endeavor? Rizek frowned, not at his sister, but at the renegade woman who stared back. Why? I thought you would laugh at me, Cyrus said, that you would think I was deluding myself. Well, Rizek said, I probably would have. Yet here we are. His tone was not what Akos expected from someone who had just gotten what he wanted. He was downright terse. Ija. Akos shuddered to hear his brother's name in his enemy's mouth. Does this change the future we discussed? Ija closed his eyes. His nostrils flared like their mom sometimes did when she was focusing on a prophecy. Copying her, probably. Unless oracles needed to breathe really hard through their noses for some reason. Akos had no idea, but without meaning to, he was pressing toward his brother, right up against Voss's arm, which stayed girder firm.
Aija, Akos said. After all, he had to try, didn't he? Aija, don't.
But Aija was already answering.
The future holds firm.
Thank you, Rizek said.
He bent over next to the renegade.
Where, Zosita Sarukta, have you been all these seasons exactly?
Adrift, Zosita said.
I never found the exiles, if that's what you're really asking.
Still bent, Rizek looked Syra over, looked at the inky streaks on her arms. She was hunched, a hand clutching at her head.
Syra.
Rizek pointed at Zosita.
Let's figure out if this woman tells the truth.
No, Syra said, breathless. We've talked about this.
I won't. I can't.
You can't?
Rizek leaned in closer to her face, stopping just short of touching her.
She defames this family. She weakens our position. She rallies our enemies. And you say you can't?
I am your brother and the sovereign of Shotet.
You can, and you will, do what I say. Do you understand?
Darkness crowded the gold brown of her skin. The shadows were like a new system of nerves or veins in her body. She made a choking sound.
Akos felt choked, too, but he didn't move. Couldn't possibly help her with Voss standing in his path.
No! The scream tore from her, and she reached for Rizek, fingers bent into claws. Rizek tried to shove her away, but she was too fast, too strong. The current shadows rushed to her hand like a surge of blood to a wound, and Rizek screamed, writhed, collapsed to his knees. Voss ran at her, wrenched her away, and threw her to the side. From the ground, she glared at her brother and spat.
Take my eye, take my fingers, take whatever you want. I won't.
For a while, as Syra cringed at the pain burned into her body by the current, Rizek just stood there looking at her. Then he flicked his first two fingers at Akos in a gesture that meant come. And there wasn't much point in defying him, Akos knew. He'd get what he wanted one way or another. Akos was starting to understand why Syra had spent so many seasons just following his orders. At a certain point, defying him just seemed like a waste of time.
I thought you might say that, Rizek said. Voss, hold on to my sister, please.
Voss grabbed Syra by the arms and set her on her feet. Her eyes found Akos's, wide with terror.
I may have left you to your own devices for a time, Rizek said. But I did not stop paying attention, Syra.
Rizek went to the side of the room, brushing a wall panel with his fingers. It slid back to reveal a wall of weapons, like the one in Noavek Manor, but smaller. Probably just his favorites, Akos thought, feeling detached from his own body as Rizek chose a long, thin rod. At his touch, the current wrapped around the metal. Dark streams, so like the ones that plagued Syra.
You see, I've noticed something peculiar, and I'd like to see if my hypothesis is correct, Rizek said. If it is, it will solve a problem before it really even becomes a problem.
He twisted the notches in the rod's handle, and the current got denser, darker. Not a lethal weapon, Akos noted, but one designed for causing pain. Syra's current shadows flickered and fluttered like flames caught in a draft.
Rizek laughed. It's almost indecent, he said, putting a heavy hand on Akos's shoulder. Akos resisted the urge to shake him off. It would only make things worse.
and it was just now dawning on him that the rod was for him. Maybe it was the whole reason he had been brought here, to make Syra cooperate again, to become Rizek's new tool of control.
"You may want to just give up now," Rizek said to him in a low voice, "and get on the ground."
"Eat shit," Akos replied in Thuvazit. But of course, Rizek had an answer to that. He slammed the rod into Akos' back. Pain screeched through him. Acid. Fire. Akos screamed into his teeth. "Stay on your feet," he thought. "Stay." Rizek hit him again, this time over his right side, and he cried out again. Beside him, Cyrus sobbed, but Akos was watching Aija, passive, as he looked out the window. Almost like he didn't know what was going on. Rizek hit him a third time, and his knees gave out, but he was quiet now. Sweat rolled down the back of his neck, and all around him everything swayed. Aija had flinched that time. Another blow, and Akos fell forward onto his hands. He and Syra moaned at the same time.
"I want to know what she knows about the exiles," Rizek said to Syra, breathless. "Before tomorrow's execution."
Syra wriggled out of Voss's grasp and went to Zosita, who was still bound to the chair by her wrists. Zosita nodded at Syra like she was giving permission. Syra brought her hands to Zosita's head. Akos saw, through half-focused eyes, the dark webs on the backs of Syra's hands, and Zosita's contorted face, and Rizek's satisfied smile. Darkness crowded the corners of his vision, and he tried to breathe through the pain. Zosita screaming. Syra screaming. Their voices ran together. Then he blacked out. He woke with Syra at his side. "Come on." Her arm was across his shoulders. She hoisted him to his feet. "Come on, let's go, let's go." He blinked slowly. Zosita was breathing in fits and starts, hair covering her face. Voss was standing nearby, looking bored. Aija was crouched in the corner, his head buried in his arms. Nobody stopped them from stumbling out of the room. Rizek had gotten what he wanted. They made it to Syra's room. She dropped Akos at the edge of her bed, then stormed around the room, gathering towels, ice, painkiller, frantically tears running down her face. The room still smelled malty from the potion he'd brewed earlier.
"Syra. Did she tell him anything?"
"No. She's a good liar," she replied as she fought to uncork the vial of painkiller with trembling hands.
"You'll never be safe again, you know that? Neither of us will."
She got the stopper out and touched it to his mouth, though he could easily have grabbed it himself. He didn't point that out, just parted his lips to swallow it.
"I was never safe. You were never safe."
He didn't understand why she was so rattled. It wasn't like Rizek doing something terrible was a new thing.
"I don't understand why he made a point to use me."
Her legs brushed his as she came to stand between his knees. They were almost the same height this way, with him perched on her high bed. And she was close, like she sometimes was when they fought, laughing in his face because she'd knocked him down. But that was different. Completely different. She wasn't laughing. She smelled familiar, like the herbs she burned to clear the room of food smells, like the spray she used in her hair to smooth its tangles. She brought a hand to his shoulder, then trailed trembling fingers along his collarbone, down his sternum, pressed a gentle hand to his chest, didn't look at his face.
"You," she whispered, "are the only person he could possibly hold over me now."
She touched his chin to steady it as she kissed him. Her mouth was warm and wet with tears. Her teeth scored his bottom lip as she pulled away. Akos didn't breathe. He wasn't sure he could remember how. "Don't worry," she said softly. "I won't do that again." She backed away and shut herself in the bathroom.
Chapter 20. Syra. I attended Zosita Sarukta's execution the next day, as I was supposed to. It was a crowded, loud event, the first celebration that had been allowed since the Sojourn Festival. I stood off to the side, with Vas, Aija, and Akos, as Rizek gave a long speech about loyalty and the strength of Shotet unity, the envy of the galaxy, the tyranny of the assembly. Ema stood at his side, her hands on the railing, her fingertips tapping out a lilting rhythm. When Rizek dragged the knife across Zosita's throat, I felt like crying, but I suppressed my tears. Everyone in the crowd roared as Zosita's body fell, and I closed my eyes. When I opened them, Ema's hands were trembling on the railing. Rizek wore a streak of Zosita's blood. And far off, in the crowd that watched, Tekka held a hand over her mouth. As Zosita's blood spread across the floor, as Akos's father's blood had, and so many others, I felt the wrongness of her death like an ill-fitting shirt I could not remove. It was a relief to still be able to feel that. All across the loading bay were piles of gray jumpsuits, arranged by size. From where I stood, they looked like a line of boulders. The jumpsuits were waterproof, designed specifically for sojourns to Pitha. There were piles of waterproof masks along the back wall, too, to keep the rain from our scavengers' eyes. Old supplies from some other sojourn, but sufficient. Rizek's sojourn craft, with its sleek, golden wings, waited by the release hatch. It would take him, me, Ema, Vas, Aija, Akos, and a few others to Pitha's surface to play political games with the Pithar leadership. He wanted to establish friendly relations, an alliance. Military assistance, too, surely. Rizek had a talent for this that my father never had. He must have gotten it from my mother. "We should go," Akos said, from over my shoulder. He held himself stiffly today, cringing when he had to lift a cup to his lips, crouching rather than bending to pick things up. I shivered at his voice alone. I thought that when I kissed him, days ago, it would free me from feelings like those, by taking away the mystery of what it would be like. But it had only made things worse. Now I knew what he felt like, what he tasted like, and I ached with want. "I guess so," I said, and we descended the steps to the loading bay floor, shoulder to shoulder. Ahead of us, the small transport ship gleamed like sunstruck glass under the harsh lights. The polished side bore the Shotet character for Noavek. Despite its ostentatious outsides, the inside of the ship was as simple as any other transport vessel. At the back was an enclosed bathroom stall and a tiny galley. Lining the walls were jump seats with seat belts, and up front, in the ship's nose, was navigation. My father had taught me to fly, one of the only activities we ever did together. I had worn thick gloves so my current gift wouldn't interfere with the ship's mechanisms. I had been too small for the chair, so he had gotten a cushion for me to sit on. He was not a patient teacher. He screamed at me more than once, but when I got it right, he always said, "Good," with a firm nod, like he was hammering the compliment in place. He died when I was 11 seasons old, on a sojourn. Only Rizek and Vas had been with him at the time. They were attacked by a band of pirates and had to fight their way out. Rizek and Vas returned from the conflict, with the eyes of their vanquished enemies in a jar, no less. But Lazmet Noavec did not. Voss fell into step beside me as I walked toward the ship.
I have been instructed to remind you to put on a good show for the Pithar.
What, was I born a Noavec just yesterday? I snapped. I know how to handle myself.
Noavec you may be, but you have become increasingly erratic, Voss said.
Go away, Voss, I said, too tired to come up with another barb. Thankfully, he heeded me, striding toward the front of the ship, where my cousin Vakrez stood with one of the maintenance workers. A flash of bright hair alerted me to Tekka, not working on our ship, of course, but off to the side with her hands buried in a panel of wires. She didn't have any tools in hand. She was just pinching each wire in turn, her eyes closed. I hesitated for a moment. I could feel myself stirring to action, though I wasn't sure exactly what that action would be. I just knew that I had spent too long standing still while others warred around me, and it was time to move. I'll meet you in the ship, I said to Akos. I want to speak to Zosita's daughter for a moment. He hesitated with a hand near my elbow, like he was about to comfort me. Then he seemed to change his mind, shoving his hand in his pocket and shuffling toward the ship. When I drew closer to Tekka, she pulled her hand from the tangle of wires and marked something on the small screen balanced on her knees. "The wires never shock you?" I said. "No," she said without looking at me. "Feels like humming, unless they're busted. What do you want?" "A meeting," I said. "With your friends. You know which ones." "Listen," she said, finally turning. "You basically forced me to turn in my own mother, and then your brother killed her in front of everyone not 2 days ago." Her eye was red with tears. "What about that situation makes you think you can ask me for anything?"
"I'm not asking," I said. "I'm telling you what I want, and I think the people you know might want it too. Do whatever you like, but it's not really about you, is it?" The patch she wore over her eye was thicker than usual, and the skin that showed above it had a sheen, like she had spent the day sweating. Maybe she had. The quarters of maintenance workers were close to the churning machinery that kept the ship running.
"How are we supposed to trust you?" she said in a low voice.
"You're desperate, and so am I," I said. "Desperate people make stupid decisions all the time." The hatch on the port side of the transport vessel opened, spotting the floor with light.
"I'll see what I can do," she said.
She jerked her chin toward the ship.
"Do you even do anything useful in that thing? Or just make nice with politicians?"
She shook her head.
"Don't suppose you royals go on scavenges, do you?"
"I do, actually," I said, defensive. But it was stupid to pretend, with someone like her, that my life had been anything but privileged by comparison to hers. After all, she was the one-eyed girl with no family left to speak of, who lived in a closet. Tekka grunted a little, then turned back to the wires. Akos was looking at Voss, sitting across from us, like he was about to lunge at his throat. Two seats down from him was Ema, dressed elegantly as always, her long, dark skirt arranged to cover her ankles. She looked like she was having tea at a sovereign's breakfast, rather than strapped into a hard chair on a spaceship. Aija was in the seat closest to the toilet, his eyes closed. There were others between Ema and Aija, our cousin Vakrez and his husband Malin, and Suzao Kuzar. His wife was too ill to make the journey, he claimed. And beside the captain, Rel, was Rizek.
"What was the planet the examiners actually selected, based on the current's movement?" Ema called out to Rizek. "Agra?"
"Yes, Agra," Rizek said with a laugh over his shoulder. "As if that would have done us any good."
Sometimes the current chooses, Ema said, leaning her head back. And sometimes we do.
It almost sounded like wisdom. The engines hummed at the touch of a few buttons. Then Rel pulled the lever for the hover mechanism, and the ship lifted from the ground, shuddering a little. The loading bay doors opened, displaying the northern hemisphere of the water planet beneath us. It was covered entirely by clouds, the whole planet embroiled in a storm. The cities, obscured from view now, were buoyant, built to shift with the rising and falling water levels, and to withstand strong winds and rain and lightning. Rel urged the ship forward, and we shot into space, for a moment clutched in the empty embrace of darkness. It took no time at all for us to enter the atmosphere. The sudden pressure made me feel like my body was collapsing in on itself. I heard someone in the back of the ship retching. I clenched my teeth and forced myself to keep my eyes open. The descent was my favorite part, when huge stretches of land opened up beneath us, or in this case, water, since with the exception of a few soggy land masses, this place was entirely submerged. A gasp of pleasure escaped me when we broke through the cloud layer. Rain drummed on the roof, and Rel turned on the visualizer so we didn't have to try to peer through the droplets. But past the drops and visualizer screen, I saw huge, frothy waves, blue-gray-green, and globular glass buildings adrift on the surface, enduring the crash of the water. I couldn't help it. I glanced at Akos, whose face was frozen in shock. "At least it's not Trella," I said to him, hoping to bring him back to himself. "The skies are full of birds. Huge mess when they all hit the windshield. Had to scrape them off with a knife."
"You did that yourself, did you?" Ema said to me. "How charming!"
"Yes, you'll find I have a high tolerance for disgusting things," I replied. "I employ it regularly. I'm sure you do, too." Ema closed her eyes rather than answer, but before she did, I thought I saw her glance at Rizek. One of the disgusting things she tolerated, I was sure. I had to admire her talent for survival. We shot over the waves, the ship battered somewhat by the powerful wind, for a long time. From above, the waves looked like wrinkled skin. Most people found Pitha monotonous, but I loved how it mimicked the sprawl of space. We flew above one of the many floating trash piles the Chotet would soon land on to scavenge. It was larger than I had imagined, the size of a city sector at least, and covered with heaps of metal in all different shades. I wanted more than anything to land on it, to sort through whatever wet artifacts it held for something of value. But we flew on. The capital city of Pitha, Sector 6. The Pithar were not famous for their poetic names, to say the least. Floated on the gray-black seas near the planet's equator. The buildings looked like bubbles adrift, though they were anchored with a vast, submerged support structure that, I had heard, was a miracle of engineering, upheld by the best-salaried maintenance workers in all the galaxy. Rel guided our ship to the landing pad, and through the windows I watched a mechanical structure extend toward us from one of the nearby buildings. A tunnel, it seemed, to keep us from getting soaked through. A shame. I wanted to feel the rain. Akos and I followed the others, at a distance, from the ship, leaving only Rel in our wake. At the front of our group, Rizek, Ema at his side, greeted a Pithar dignitary, who gave him a curt bow in return.
"What language would you prefer we conduct our business in?"
the Pithar said in Chotet, so clumsy I barely understood him. He had a thin white mustache that looked more like mold than hair, and wide, dark eyes. "We are all fluent in Otherian," Rizek said testily. The Chotet had a reputation for only speaking our own language, thanks to my father's, and now my brother's, policy of keeping our people ignorant of the galaxy's true workings. But Rizek had always been sensitive about the insinuation that he wasn't multilingual, as if it meant people thought he was stupid.
That is a relief, sir, the dignitary said, now in Otherian. I am afraid the subtleties of the Shotet language escape me. Allow me to show you all to your sleeping quarters.
As we passed through the temporary tunnel, beneath the drumming of the rain, I felt a powerful urge to grab a nearby Pithar and beg them to get me out of here, away from Rizek and his threats and the memory of what he had done to my only friend. But I couldn't leave Akos here, and Akos's eyes were currently fixed on the back of his brother's head. There had been four sojourns between this one and the one that had claimed my father's life. The last one had taken us to Othir, the wealthiest planet in the galaxy, and there, Rizek had established the new Shotet policy of diplomacy. Formerly, my mother had taken care of that, charming the leaders of each planet we visited while my father led the scavenge. But after her death, Lazmet had discovered he had no talent for charm, surprising no one, and diplomacy had fallen by the wayside, creating tension between us and the rest of the planets in the galaxy. Rizek sought to ease that tension planet by planet, smile by smile. Othir had welcomed us with a dinner, every inch of their chancellor's dining room gilded, from the plates to the paint on the walls to the cloth that covered the table. They had chosen that room, the chancellor's wife had said, for how the color would complement our dark blue formal armor. Graciously, she had also admitted to its ostentatiousness, an elegantly calculated maneuver I had admired even then. The next morning they had treated us all to a session with their personal physician, knowing they possessed the best medical technology in the galaxy. I had declined. I had had enough of doctors for a lifetime. I knew from the start that Pitha's welcome would not be as frivolous as Othir's. Every culture worshipped something. Othir, comfort. Agra, mystery. Thuva, ice flowers. Shotet, the current. Pitha, practicality. And so on. They were relentless in their pursuit of the most durable, flexible, multi-purpose materials and structures. The Chancellor. Nato was her surname, and I had forgotten her given name, since she was never called by it, lived in a large but utilitarian subterranean building made of glass. She was elected by popular vote on Pitha. The room I was sharing with Akos, the dignitary had given us a suggestive look when he offered it to me, and I had ignored him, opened up to the water, where shadowy creatures moved just out of sight. And everything looked calm, but that was its only decoration. The walls were otherwise plain, the sheets starched and white. A cot set up in the corner stood on metal legs with rubber feet. The Pithar had arranged not a fine dinner, but what I would have called a ball if there had been dancing involved. Instead, there were just groups of people standing around in what I assumed was the Pithar version of finery, stiff, waterproof fabrics in surprisingly bright colors, all the better to spot them in the rain, maybe, and not a skirt or dress to be found. I regretted, suddenly, my mother's dress, which fell to my toes, black and high-necked, to disguise most of my current shadows. The room was full of murmurs. Moving between each group was a servant with a tray in hand, offering drinks or bites of food. Their synchronized movements were the closest thing to dance here.
"Quiet in here," Akos said softly, his fingers curling around my elbow.
I shivered, trying to ignore it. "He's just dulling your pain. That's all it is. Nothing has changed. Everything is the same as it always was."
"Pitha isn't known for its dances," I said, "or any form of combat either."
"They're not your favorite, then, I take it."
"I like to move."
"I've noticed."
I could feel his breath against the side of my neck, though he wasn't that close. My awareness of him was stronger than it had ever been. I tugged my arm free to take the drink the Pithar servant offered.
"What is this?" I said, suddenly aware of my accent.
The servant eyed my shadow-stained arm uneasily.
Its effects are similar to an ice flower blend, the servant replied. Dulls the senses, lifts the spirits. Sweet and sour both.
Akos also took one, smiling at the servant as she walked on. If it's not made of ice flowers, what's it made of? He asked. Duvazits worshipped ice flowers, after all. What did he know of other substances?
I don't know. Salt water? Engine grease? I said.
Try it. I'm sure it won't hurt you. We both drank. Across the room, Rizek and Ima were smiling politely at Chancellor Nato's husband, Vec. His face had a grayish cast, and his skin sagged from his bones like it was half liquid. Maybe gravity was stronger here. I certainly felt heavier than usual, though that was probably due to Voss's constant gaze, making sure I behaved. I cringed at my half-empty glass. Disgusting.
So, I'm curious, Akos said. How many languages do you actually speak?
Really, it's just Xotet, Thuvazit, Otherian, and Trellin, I said. But I know a little Zoldan, some Pithar, and I was working on Ogryn before you arrived and distracted me. His eyebrows lifted. What? I said. I don't have any friends. It gives me a lot of free time.
You think you're so difficult to like.
I know what I am.
Oh? And what's that?
A knife, I said. A hot poker. A rusty nail.
You are more than any of those things.
He touched my elbow to turn me toward him. I knew I was giving him a strange look, but I couldn't seem to stop. It was just the way my face wanted to be.
I mean, he said, removing his hand, it's not like you're going around boiling the flesh of your enemies.
Don't be stupid, I said. If I was going to eat the flesh of my enemies, I would roast it, not boil it. Who wants to eat boiled flesh? Disgusting. He laughed, and everything felt a little better.
Silly me. I clearly wasn't thinking, he said. I'm sorry to tell you this, but I think you're being summoned by the Sovereign.
Sure enough, when I looked at Rizek, his eyes were on me. He jerked his chin up. You didn't bring any poison, did you? I said without looking away from my brother. I could try to slip it in his drink.
Wouldn't give it to you if I did, Akos said.
When I gave him an incredulous look, he explained, he's still the only one who can restore Aija.
After he does that, I'll poison him with a song on my lips.
No one does single-minded quite like you, Kariseth, I said. Your task, while I'm gone, is to compose your poisoning song so I can hear it when I get back.
Easy, he said. Here I go, a-poisoning.
Smirking, I swallowed the last of my vile Pithar engine grease, handed the glass to Akos, and crossed the room.
Ah, there she is! Vec, this is my sister, Syra.
Rizek was wearing his warmest smile, his arm outstretched toward me like he intended to fold me into his side. He didn't, of course, because it would have hurt him. The current shadows were there to remind him, staining my cheek and the side of my nose. I nodded to Vec, who stared blank-eyed back without greeting.
Your brother was just explaining the Xotet rationale behind some of the kidnapping reports associated with Xotet scavengers over the past decade, he said. He said you could vouch for the policy.
Oh, he did he? My anger, then, was like dry kindling, quickly ignited. I couldn't find a path through it. I just stared at Rizek for a few moments. He smiled back at me, still with that kind look in his eyes. Beside him, Ima was also smiling.
Because of your familiarity with your servant, Rizek said lightly. Of course.
Ah, yes, my familiarity with Akos, Rizek's new tool of control. Right, I said. Well, we don't consider it kidnapping, obviously. The Shotet call it reclaiming, because everyone brought back